So today I'm going to talk on our work. It's primarily dealing with shared data synchronization. And what we did was we compared a bunch of shared data synchronization techniques on a commodity multicore. And in terms of the metrics, so we considered performance as well as energy efficiency as the metrics. Which are these bunch of shared data synchronization techniques we considered? So the answer is we used mutex, Spinlocks, and software transactional memory. So software transactional memory, abbreviated as STM, is a fairly new technique for shared data synchronization. We also had sequential implementations for each of the benchmarks we considered. Now, for those of you who don't know what STM is, here is a picture which briefly describes what STM is all about. So, on the left-hand side, you see the typical behavior for lock-based code. So you will have there are two cores on which there are two threads running in parallel, and if you have a critical section, and if there is overlap of critical section, then in case of lock-based code, there will be thread waiting or spinning. On the other hand, on the right-hand side, you see STM. In case there is an overlap of critical section, then these critical sections take a form of transactions, and they can actually execute in parallel. Of course, there are cases where if there is some kind of conflict between the critical sections, then there will be a serialization. Now, coming to the results directly, what have we found out through our measurement study? So, the metrics, as I stated before, the metrics involves not just performance but also energy. So we considered performance per watt, energy delay product, these two metrics. And overall, what we saw was STMs, because of their behavior in terms of utilizing the cores as much as possible all the time, we saw that first, this result just gives you a glimpse. For one of the workloads, we observed 224% speed up, 653% reduction in EDP, and 213% improvement in PPW. So now these are fairly big numbers, so you guys will be curious to know why we see such big improvements. So the answer lies in this table. So, I mean, if you want, if this is the most important slide, on the left-hand side, you can see various parameters and factors which contribute to the overall behavior of the synchronization techniques. So, namely, core utilization, core sleep state usage, duration, power, and energy. So, let's consider the core utilization first. So STMs end up using the cores all the time. So they are using the cores, they are keeping the cores busy. Mutex, on the other hand, lead to idle cycles where the core is not doing anything. Spinlocks lead to something called as wasteful cycles. So basically, they'll be actively spinning. And finally, sequential, where only one of the core is used at any given time. So moving on to the next factor, the cores, this is most important, the core sleep state usage or energy saving state. So STMs and Spinlocks both do not utilize, since the cores are busy, kept busy all the time, they do not utilize any of the sleep states. And Mutex, on the other hand, Mutex does utilize the sleep state, But the duration of these idle periods are so short that the core is never, we observe that the core never goes into the deepest sleep states. Sequential implementation, there is only one core, as I said before, only one core is active and the other cores are into deepest sleep state. Overall, in terms of duration, since STMs are able to extract a lot of disjoint access parallelism, the workload runs quickly and finishes, so duration is short. Mutex, the duration is long. For spinlox too, because of serialization, the duration is long. Sequential, of course, it's much longer because it's serialized altogether. Power, when I talk about power here, it's the instantaneous watt. So since both STM and spinlox are actively using all the cores, the power is high, and for mutex, the power is low, and similarly for sequential. Energy, the final factor, energy, it's we see low energy for STM because even though the power was high, there will be a slide which will explain this why high power translate to. So essentially, it's like energy is just the area under the curve. So high power, but since the workload finishes quickly, the overall energy is still low. Mutex, the energy is high since it runs for a longer time. Sequential, the energy is low because the other cores are kept inactive. And spinlock, of course, it keeps the cores active all the time and does not do any useful work. So the overall energy is highest in this case. So in terms of, before going into the results in detail, this slide just gives you the overall, what is our simulation setup, our experimental setup. So we used, for conducting the experiments, we used a Linux OS with core sleep state manager. So there is something called as CPU idle governors. So they come with standard Linux distribution, so we use them, which will use the processor's sleep state. They'll automatically use the processor's sleep states. In terms of the hardware, we used latest Intel Sandy Bridge commodity processor. Now this processor has per core sleep state support, so which was important for this study. Other than that, this processor also had a facility for energy management, on-chip energy management, we also were able to read energy numbers from the processor's on-chip energy controller. For Mutex, we use standard pthread library. For STM, we used something called a SwissTM. It is like one of the best STMs currently. It's coming from EPFL group. And finally, in terms of benchmark, we use STEMP TM benchmark. So there are two reasons why STEMP is good. One being it covers benchmarks from many different domains. There's scientific processing, transactional processing, and data mining, etc. And in terms of the amount of time spent inside critical sections, so that varies from something like 2% to 90%. So in a way, it's this benchmark suit like is not biased to either towards logs or STM. Although it has lot of workload which spend significant time, but it also covers workloads which spend less time inside critical section. So coming to the results, so this is the plot for duration, and duration of performance. As you can see, so on the x-axis there are different stem benchmarks, and on the y-axis time, that's the time taken to run the benchmark. So, and for each of the benchmarks there are four different implementations, like sequential, then STM, mutex lock, and CGL is the spin lock. So as you can see, the green bars, STM performs, is able to complete the workload quickly in most of the cases except for k-means low. Moving on to energy. So this matrix is performance per watt. In the sense, it's like critical section or transactions per second divided by energy per second. So it boils down to something like a constant divided by energy, a reciprocal of energy in short. So for this, you can see that in terms of energy, sequential is able to perform, the energy footprint of sequential implementation is low for like as many as three. For k-means, as many as three, and for rest of the cases, for rest of the cases, it's STM doing better. Yeah, except for k-means, like for k-means, we also observed that the time was locks were doing better in terms of time. Finally, if you combine performance and energy, then you have EDP. In terms of EDP, STM is better, except for YADA. In case of YADA, the EDP for sequential turns out to be the best. Finally, this graph will give you an idea of the energy, power, and timing. So if you see at the, if you look at the red line, so red line is for mutex. So basically what this graph shows is instantaneous watts as you move in time. So the area under this will be your energy. So it takes around slightly more than 600 milliseconds for mutex to finish. On the other hand, STM, if it is run with frequency of the core set to 3.4 gigahertz, you see, although the watts are high, it's able to complete the workload within less than 2000 milliseconds. And what we did is we scaled down the frequency of the cores to 2.6 gigahertz, and it's like trading off little bit of performance for reduction in average or peak power. So in spite of scaling down the cores, you see the timing is not varying much, and still the energy budget is low. Yeah, in terms of future work, we plan to cover a wider set of benchmarks. Like one of the questions is like, does there exist applications for which both locks and STM scale, but STM scale better, both in terms of performance and energy? The other question is, what is the energy efficiency of mutex the best? Like, can we do better in terms of utilizing core sleep state in a more fine-grained and controlled manner? Finally, how does conflict rate in case of STMs affect the overall performance and energy? Like, we see a need for a thorough quantitative analysis of such workload parameters. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
So, Yin, Wei Sun Shi from Wayne State. So in your presentation, you mentioned that you pick a Linux, which allow you to do this per-core sleep control and also the Intel CPU. I wonder that when you do the experiment, have you done anything explicitly to control them, or you just assume they will be done automatically?
Yeah, so for the CPU idle governor, there is, so which does the switching of sleep states. So there is a governor called menu governor, which is supposed to be the best governor. So we use that particular governor. We haven't tweaked the settings. We haven't done extensive tweaking of settings for that. Yeah.
Tim Harris from Oracle. You mentioned at the end wanting to look at some other workloads. Now this one's going back a bit, but you might be interested in the work I did with Keir Fraser some years back.
No, I did not get you.
Yeah. At the end you said you want to look at other workloads.
Yeah.
Because there's a big problem in these comparisons because Stamp does not include good lock-based algorithms.
Yeah.
And so it's likely that if locking was used carefully,
yeah,
it would behave better than in these cases.
Yeah.
But there's a collection of workloads that, in Keir Fraser's PhD, where he's built different shared memory data structures using locks and using transactional memory. And so okay. It might be that that is a good workload to take a look at.
Okay, you mean STM Bench 7?
No, it's a system from the University of Cambridge. I can give you a reference
okay.
to it later
okay.
if you haven't seen it.
Okay. Yeah, I can. Do I have time?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can show you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Let me.
Oh, you want to show something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So answering this C state question, so this is like for one of the cores, we are capturing the C states as you progress. So on the x-axis it's time, and on the y-axis it's the per state residency. So C0 is like the active state. C0 is the active state. And C1, C2, C3, and C6 are the sleep states. So, so that covers the green, red, blue, and pink, right? And what remains is the light blue. So the light blue is the program actively doing something, like not inside critical section. So one of the problems is like, if you see, ideally the blue, light blue, should overlap with the red, right? Because you have the cores active at that time. So, and of course you must have noticed the trend, like the C1 and C0, when the red is up, the green is down, right? So, the current performance counters, like, we were not even able to, at that granularity, we were not even able to synchronize the get or like a clear instance. There is a clear delay in the light green thing. Like, so at that scale, it's fairly difficult to even analyze the program carefully in terms of its active behavior and the C state residency.
So I keep liking, you know, people keep comparing energy efficiency of different log-based programs. I'd be interested, or you know, maybe it's really interesting to see how log-free data structures are, you know, if you convert these programs into log-free, and then what happens to energy efficiency. I mean, STM is, you know, a step better, but you know, what really happens if you convert everything to log-free and then try to see.
Yeah, so
I mean, I'm not saying that you have already done this.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, what would be your intuition?
So for complex data structures, like I can give you an example. Like so, one of the benchmarks within the stamp is vacation. So vacation is a travel reservation system, and you have like a bunch of data structures. Like you have a bunch of red black trees and other data structures, and then you have threads which will access. So each data structure represents a you will have some timetable, and then you will have some flights going, some data structures. And then for these large data structures, complex data structure, it's not there are no techniques currently which can transform them into lock-free variants. Only for simple data structures like queues and linked list, you have lock-free implementations, but for complex data structures, there are no lock-free implementations.
Right, so I think the problem boils down to rather than looking at a stamp, look at what data structure they use and heavily insert and update and delete the elements into it. And maybe you may be interested in Neil Shawit's work. Neil Shawit is probably now at MIT, and he's actually developed a lot of lock-free even for complex.
Yeah, so that's another direction. Like you basically take a data structure and try to develop lock-free. There is work going on that angle too. That's there.
Yeah.